rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, peace and freedom, truth, justice in the American way. It's 6 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman here with you. And coming up on today's program, by the way, Jeffrey Feldman from Frame Shop is Open says to the Bush administration, leadership first, vacation second. And Larry Scott from VA Watchdog talks about the rise in post-traumatic stress disorder among our vets. First, however, we have Rusty Weller with us. He's the Reverend Rusty Weller. The editorial director of conservativepetitions.com and christianpetitions.com. Reverend Weller, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
I understand you have a petition out right now. You're conducting a petition drive, reading here from the news release we got on you. Reverend Rusty Weller is conducting a petition drive to ban Hillary and all other women from gaining ballot access for the top of the ticket, for the President of the United States. You're of the opinion that only straight men should run society?
No, and let me just cut to the chase on this. I do not mean to take up any of your time. There was we got some wires crossed late at night. The press release is totally inaccurate, and I think we should have sent something to you saying that, apologizing for letting it go. The petition was simply this, that we believe, the sponsor of the petition believes, that the Constitution language for qualifications for president is a male gender. It's a man-only job, and it's different from the language for a U.S. senator or U.S. representative. So we had a petition up, but as soon as we saw that, woke up the next morning and realized that the press release had gone out, we immediately took it down, and because we do not believe that, we think it's, you know, fine. If somebody is qualified to be president, it doesn't matter what their gender is. So we're going to drop out of that, and if you need to excuse me then as a guest, I certainly understand.
Well, that's interesting. I'm curious about your take on it, Reverend Weller. Are you of the opinion that the Constitution, I mean, here we have a couple of people on the Supreme Court right now, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, and probably John Roberts, who are pretty much on record as saying that they think that the Constitution should not be interpreted. It should simply be literally read. And the Constitution literally does say he over a dozen times, as I recall, in reference to the President of the United States.
20 times.
Okay, 20 times. So are you personally of the opinion, and if not, you know, it's fine. I'm wondering what, you know, well, first of all, what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, let me just give you the history of all this so you can be brought up to speed and understand our mistake. And we did, the mistake was on our part. And I think when you make a mistake, you ought to fess up to it, even if it makes you look sort of stupid at the time. And we feel that way. And it's an embarrassment to us because what we put up on our website has got to be truthful, and there has to be a factual basis to it, or we take the hit. And you know, in this case, we're worthy of a hit on this. But originally, our website is there to allow people, individuals, groups, organizations to put up a petition to try to attract the public's attention so that the minds of decision makers can be changed. Hmm. And there's petition sites all over the place, and we're just one of them. Okay, now my task as editorial director is to sort of see what's out there. And somebody came to me and said, what about a potential petition that would say, let's block Hillary as president because they running for it, because a year ago or so I think this came up. Well, I looked into it, and you know, there's reasons why she should, why she shouldn't, and all that. And I don't really care to comment any further about that, except that in my research I came across some what other people had said, some constitutional experts, scholars, as they say. And one of them, several of them said, you know, the language for president is reads male only. It says the president shall be, and then thereafter it says he will be, you know, and goes through the qualifications. And you'd think, well, that's just the way our founding fathers wrote it. They really weren't gender enlightened back then. Well, no, because in the U.S. senator qualifications, in the House of in the U.S. representative qualifications, they say the person shall be so old. The person shall be.
Right.
And so you get the opinion, if you look at that, this on face value, that the founding fathers felt that it's okay for a woman to be senator, U.S. representative, fine. President, they wanted the commander-in-chief to be a man.
So what's your opinion?
That was their time. And I believe times have changed, and I think women are certainly deserve the right to be considered for the presidency. Why not? I have no biblical basis for that. I have no other, as a conservative, I have no other belief in it. In fact, I would say that there perhaps is a conservative woman who might make a fine president.
Condi Rice. If Condi Rice wasn't, you know, if you didn't have Dick Morris out there flogging Condi Rice's presidency, would you still have this thing up?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, we don't have it up. We took it down, and I think, I'm not the total boss, but and I can't do what the sponsor. I can only do what the sponsor says.
Right.
But the point is, we took it down because it was an embarrassment to us. We went off half-cocked. I think we went off half-cocked another time. If we'd just gone to Urban Myths, you know, some of those websites that debunk some misinformation out there. But we had a sponsor come to us and said, I want to have something that would get America's to tell the oil company, which oil companies are buying terrorist-supplied oil? You know. Okay, so we wrote it out and so forth. But I did not do my research at that time. If I just checked it out, I would have said, nope, sorry, I can't do that because it's
a. Well, that's a whole separate thing. We're talking with Reverend Rusty Weller of ChristianPetitions.com.
Right.
There are people in basically within the conservative movement and some outside of it who are strongly of the opinion that women basically should shut up, get to the back of the church, as Paul, you know, said,
right.
And cover up their heads and keep their mouths quiet and not be involved in politics. And I'm assuming that it was part of that faction. And in fact, you know, they're working to do things like roll back Roe v. Wade and support pharmacists who don't want to dispense birth control pills and even challenges to the legality of birth controls. Forget abortion. I mean, we're talking even the legality of birth control. And I'm wondering if it was that faction in the conservative movement that brought this to you in the first place. And if so, what percentage, what portion of the conservative movement do you think really that faction might represent, that kind of thinking might represent?
I have no way of really quantifying that. I know who was the person who originally asked me to look into Hillary, and I tend to think that person just was a staunch conservative who really felt that that she did not deserve to be able to run for that.
So originally you think that the petition that was on ChristianPetitions.com that said that because the Constitution uses the word he when referring to the president, therefore women cannot run for president of the United States, and let's get a petition up around this and let's turn this into an issue and maybe Fox News will pick it up and it'll get a lot of play, that this was really somebody who was just anti-Hillary, and now Condi is being promoted as well, and there's a potential Republican woman that person has backed off.
Yeah, I saw a poll that. Well, no, we overruled the sponsor of the petition at this point and said, you know, we've just done something that isn't right. We sent out a press release or allowed a press release to be sent out in our name that is wrong.
Yeah, I got it. You sent it out on Friday. Today is Wednesday.
Well, we shut down the site immediately. The next morning, my boss wakes up and says, oh, no, we are not. He read it before I did, you know, and he said, no, shut it down. And we're going to decide if we're ever going to open it back up.
Yeah.
Some things are good ideas and some things are not. And you know, this one at this point would be, you know, let's face it. If that's the way the founding fathers wrote it, fine. You know, and I know that back then women had a different role in society. They were mainly not just homemakers. They raised up.
Do you think we should go back to that role in society?
Oh, I don't know about that. No, it's a different time. Back then they didn't have public schools. You know what I mean? The women educated the children, and look what fine leaders they produced early on. So, I mean, they had a tremendous role in society, but that role has changed. And I think if the Constitution says a woman should not be president, and that's what the leading authorities say, then I think it's the right of the American public to take a close look at this issue and say whether or not. And then changes can be made before.
So do you think the Constitution should be altered?
Popping up on telephone poles.
Right. Do you think that we should have a constitutional amendment to alter the Constitution?
Whatever it takes. Now, I know at least a couple of scholars who say, well, you know, this is something can be done through the vote of the House and the Senate. And I would be hate to be the a senator or representative who votes, no, women can't be a presidential candidate. I think that not, might not be good for your political career. Mm-hmm. So this is something that should be easily cleared away, and why not? Let's just clear the deck. It surprises me that Geraldine Ferraro was just the heartbeat of what, well, had she won, would have been a heartbeat away
right.
from. And this is something that
it's an interesting conversation. Reverend Weller, we're out of time. Reverend Rusty Ruller, conservativepetitions.com and christianpetitions.com. Thanks for being with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman radio program. That was an interesting little segment there. We get this email on from these guys on Friday saying, we need to have a petition to stop Hillary. Women can't run for president. Yesterday, Tuesday, that was on Friday. Today is Wednesday. On Tuesday, David Poole, our producer, calls and confirms that they're going to be on the show and then confirms the topic. And then since this guy gets on the air with a progressive station or show and realizes it, he was asking our Alex Goldmark and Dan Jacobs in New York, the folks who are running the show on that end, you know, who is this? What is this show? What's the topic we're going to talk about? All of a sudden, the story changes. And but, you know, I give him credit for being willing to go on the air and not just hang up on us and say we've changed the story. But it's interesting how these things play out, you know. By the way, today, George W. Bush, yesterday, George W. Bush came out and said, well, you know, we need to sell our ports to Dubai, Dubai Ports World, the UAE. This morning, the big alert, it's interesting, I was walking by the newsroom. Here at the there's five radio stations in this cluster where I'm broadcasting from here in Portland, and there's a newsroom that's shared by them, a whole bunch of people in there, and I walked by and Scott, the news director, he says, hey, did you see the alert? And I said, alert? And he said, yeah. And he shows me, and the AP has got this alert running across the wire. George W. Bush says he didn't know about the proposed sale of the ports on the east coast of the United States to a company based out of the United Arab Emirates before he learned about it in the media, before just a couple of days ago. And my response. George Bush, once again.
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Yeah, this has got to be his official statement. I mean, here we have a guy who, with Hurricane Katrina, because he refuses to watch TV, because he doesn't want his ego punctured. He just doesn't like any kind of criticism at all. He won't take criticism in his office. He won't listen to people who criticize him. He can't handle it, won't deal with it, and therefore he doesn't watch TV on the possibility that he might see criticism. Doesn't even watch Fox because, you know, they have liberals on. And so 3 days into Hurricane Katrina, you know, people dying, people drowning, babies dying of dehydration. You've got the correspondents from the news networks in there. You've got the correspondents from the news networks showing up on the bridge with people trying to flee the city across the river into a white suburb, and the cops from the white suburb saying, no, you have to go back. You've got people from the news media in the convention center and showing what's going on there. And Bush is clueless. He's flying off to he's flying off to Arizona, where he's having lunch with John McCain, and he feeds him some cake for his birthday, and then he flies to California, where he's with his country western star, and he's playing the guitar, and he's hamming for the camera, and he's going to go back to Texas and have a vacation, and everything's fine. And 3 days, 4 days into this thing, finally, his three guys in the White House, his top three advisors, have to draw straws for who gets to tell him that people are dying in New Orleans. And one of them gets the short straw and makes up a DVD of 2 hours worth of selected clips from the last 3 days of the news media and flies out to wherever Bush was, joins up with him, and on Air Force One shows it to him as they're flying toward New Orleans, so that when Bush looks out the window for that famous picture, he'll have some clue of what's going on. Well, apparently he had no clue that our ports were about to be sold to the Arabs. Now, that's the spin that is going to be put on things by the reactionaries, by the racists, by the freakouts, and by the paranoids. Oh, my God, it's Muslims who are buying our ports. And, of course, I mean, you've got George W. Bush for 3 years now, going on 4 years now, going on 5 years, actually. It has been 4.5 years now, has been saying, be afraid, be afraid, be very afraid. Be even more afraid than that, right? I mean, this is just from his RNC speech.
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, September the 11th. Danger, doomed danger, doomed killers. Be afraid.
This is just from his RNC speech.
May God bless you. Evil God, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Evil darkness, God, the continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. September, the continuing danger of terrorism.
And it just goes on and on and on. I mean, there's, you know, minute, 2.5 minutes of this stuff. And just a montage, you know, taken in order of Bush ranting about these things. So, of course, he's going, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. And then he's got everybody afraid of Muslims and Arabs, irrationally, I would say. And he wonders about this backlash. Well, oddly, 80-90% of our ports on the West Coast are already owned by foreign companies, most of them Chinese. In for example, the port of Newark, New Jersey, which is one of the, I believe it's one of these six ports. They have six shipping operations, six port operations there. One of them is going to be purchased by this company out of Dubai, Dubai Ports World, out of the UAE. Two of them are already owned by the communist dictators of China. And Bush, well, you know, it's...
fight terrorists, evil God, the various terrorist enemies we're facing in Iraq, the evil terrorists.
Yeah, and on and on and on and on and on it goes. And so it's like, you know, Bush is clueless on the one hand. And on the other hand, we shouldn't be surprised that when he's whipped America up into reactionary, semi-racist, certainly religionist hysteria, that hysteria comes out. Bush, the guy who was bailed out, his Arbusto oil company, was bailed out by the brother of Osama bin Laden, Salman bin Laden, who later died mysteriously in a plane crash in Texas. Just strange. 27 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third. That a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage, connubial narcs, ever vigilant and patriotic patriarchs. Defenders of marriage.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. It's amazing. I'm reading here an article from Newsblaze.com. Reverend Rusty Weller, a Baptist minister, is conducting a national talk show tour where he explains that the 19th Amendment merely grants women the right to vote and quotes chapter and verse, blah de blah. Nothing in the 19th chapter neutralizes the gender-specific qualifications for president, he says, so much work must be done before Mrs. Clinton or any woman can constitutionally serve in that role. Reverend Weller says most constitutional scholars agree our founding fathers specifically wrote into the Constitution a male-gendered office called president. And interesting. I guess he's just taking some enough heat from it that he's decided to back off. I don't know. I'm assuming it wasn't just on this program. I'm assuming that the guy has decided that he's not going to push this thing. And really what this is this, in part, it's part of the war on women in the United States, in my opinion. In part, it was just, I think it was an attempt to head off Hillary. These guys see Hillary Clinton as, you know, 666 tattooed on her forehead. And anything that they can do to stop her, I mean, they're just, you know, going full tilt boogie. It's this absolute, unreasonable, irrational fear of and war against. And, you know, it is possible. I will grant that it is possible that when the founders wrote the Constitution, when they wrote he some 20 times referring to the president in the Constitution, that they simply weren't able to imagine, given that time. I mean, keep in mind how this was 230 years ago, given that time, that they weren't able to imagine that a woman could be running for president. I would say 30 years ago, people couldn't imagine that a woman would be running. 50 years ago, anyway, people couldn't imagine that. But, you know, now we've had Golda Meir, and we've had Margaret Thatcher, and we've had, you know, women lead and leadership roles all around the world. And Americans, and certainly women in the Senate and the House, and Americans are saying, hey, wait a minute, this is stupid, this idea that, you know, only men need apply. So, but, you know, they'll keep bringing it up. I'm confident. The new big one, and really the question I asked him, need only straight men run this country, and straight men. And the new one that's going to be brought up, the new big bugaboo that they're going to be trotting out, they got, I believe, 16 states now. They have petitions to get on the ballot of the states for the 2006 election to draw conservatives out of the churches and into the ballot box so that they will vote for the Republican at the top of the ballot for senator and for House of Representatives. They're going to have petitions, ballot initiatives on to make it illegal for gays to adopt children. Well, everybody wants to protect children, and I would think that the best way to protect children is to put them in a loving family, whether it's a straight family or a gay family. A loving family is more important than living in a foster home or living in an institution or living with abusive parents. But, you know, that's not how the conservatives think. I don't think that they give a damn about that situation. I think that what they're thinking is, how can we get the most political mileage out of scaring people? Because that's what these guys are all about, is getting political mileage out of scaring people. And this Bush administration has demonstrated beyond a doubt their absolute stunning incompetence in emergency management. I mean, yeah, yes, we're going to protect you from a terrorist attack. But Hurricane Katrina hits with a week's notice, and we are still finding bodies in New Orleans. Fiscal management. In less than 5 years, Republicans have doubled our national debt to over $8.5 trillion, or $8.2 trillion. John Snow announced last week that he's going to start borrowing from the Employees Trust Fund, the Government Employees Trust Fund, in order to fund the national debt so that he can postpone by a month or so the day of reckoning when he's going to have to raise the national debt, because he has to go to Congress for that. They've botched Katrina relief. 11,000 mobile homes sinking into the mud in Arkansas. They've screwed up Medicare with the drug program. $50 million this thing is costing us because they wanted to be sure to pass out money to their friends in the pharma industry. They blew it in Afghanistan. The president of Afghanistan only controls 3/4 of one city, Kabul. He's referred to in Afghanistan as the mayor of Kabul, Hamid Karzai, the former Unocal oil industry executive. Al-Qaeda, warlords, and the Taliban still control the rest of the country. Although we spent $75 billion to take it, it's becoming, on the risk of a soldier dying in the field basis, it's becoming the most deadly of our war fronts. The Taliban is resurging. We still haven't caught bin Laden. He's out there. He's a 6'4" guy on a camel with a dialysis machine. Can't find him. Well, his brother did bail out George's failing oil company. I don't think that has anything to do with it. In Iraq, we're spending $6 billion a month, and not only is it not showing result, the result that it is showing is that we're being viewed all around the world as the evil empire. Iran is calling the shots in the Shiite regions. In North Korea, here we've got a country that had posed no threat to us at all when George Bush became president. Now they've got nuclear weapons. This happened on George Bush's watch, in large part because of his idiotic rhetoric. Idiotic, that's an awful strong word. Ill-advised rhetoric, pandering to fear in the United States, that caused Kim Jong-il to say, okay, that's it. I'm going to pull the seals off these things. You know, enough already. You've got social programs. 50 million Americans can't afford medical insurance. Meanwhile, the Bush administration has cut $40 billion from domestic social programs, including health care for the working poor. The military, overused and over-deployed. Trade, we're approaching a trillion-dollar trade deficit, $220 billion with China alone. Record high energy prices, record high energy consumption. Meanwhile, Dick Cheney goes to the Supreme Court to keep his task force members a secret, his energy task force. We just went for the first time since the Great Depression into negative personal savings for the average American. The average American now owing over $9,000 to credit card companies alone. Human rights, we're running secret prisons, we have a concentration camp, we have a judicial system that is broken, we're torturing prisoners of war, everybody around the world knows about it. These are the wonderful benefits of the Bush administration. This is what they have brought us. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. And in the meantime, now the Republicans, here's the latest thing. This is happening in the state of Washington, but I guarantee you it's coming to other states near you. This from the Northwest Progressive blog, nwprogressive.org. The voters would have to prove they are U.S. citizens and register to vote, and re-register to vote, under an initiative the supporters say they're going to file this week in Washington State. Conservative think tank Evergreen Freedom Foundation, yeah, right, they're very much about freedom, no doubt about it, is backing the initiative that was expected to be announced Wednesday afternoon. What's this all about? People are scratching their heads. Why do they want everybody to re-register before they can vote? Here's what it's all about. Very simply, frankly, let me just pop this thing up. And this is just Paul Weyrich laying this thing out.
How many of our...
Let me, before I do this, tell you who Paul... Paul Weyrich is the guy, he's the direct mail genius who turned Ronald Reagan into president. He's the guy who pulled together the Christian community back in the 1980s. He helped Jerry Falwell put together the Christian coalition. He is one of the most powerful power brokers in the background of the Christian part of the Republican Party. Okay? Here's Paul Weyrich, and he claims credit for making Ronald Reagan president, and I think he can accurately make that claim. Here's Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So here we see this from Rachel LaCourte in the Associated Press. Voters will have to prove they're U.S. citizens and re-register to vote under an initiative the supporters said they'll file this week in the state of Washington. The group takes issue with the state's new $6 million voter registration database, which has been checking for duplicate and dead voters since last month. The initiative would make all voter registrations inactive until people prove their citizenship and re-registered. Voters who show up at the polls and discover that they're inactive, they can vote by provisional ballot until their registration is verified. Right. So, they've got this huge mailing list of all the right-wingers in the state. The Republican Party last week sent out an email asking for the church memberships of every... If you attend a church, would you please send us the directory of all your church members? Many churches publish these directories. Would you please send that to us? So they get this list of all the right-wingers in Washington State, and then they pass a law saying, everybody who's registered to vote, you've been registered to vote for 30 years in the state, forget it, you're not registered to vote anymore. And then then they send out an email just to the right-wingers saying, by the way, don't forget to re-register. It's how you take a state without taking a state. I mean, this is absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. And going on right under our noses. And they're right up front about it. As I said, here's Paul Weyrich. I don't want everybody to vote. History shows that as voter turnout goes down, our leverage goes. This is why they do negative advertising. This is why they do character assassination advertising. Because when people are convinced that all the politicians are crumb bums, they don't show up to vote. And then they put a single issue on the ballot, like, let's stop gays from adopting children. Put a single issue on the ballot that they know is going to bring out a particular base. Or let's stop third-term abortions. Well, that's going to the Supreme Court now. Or let's not let gays get married. Or let's stop flag burning. Some one thing that's going to bring out one of their nutcase constituencies and bring them out to vote. And bingo, who's voting? Just those folks. Because everybody else has said, oh, they're all bums. Because of all the negative campaigning, all the negative advertising, it is time for America to wake up, figure out what these guys are up to, see, through the lies of all this, and participate in our democracy. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your cheating heart will make you weak.
And welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Whit in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Whit. You may have heard our discussion.
To talk to you, Tom.
Say what?
It's so nice to have a chance to talk to you.
Okay.
And being an evil conservative, actually, you gave me a chance to think, because last week you asked me a really funny question. I never hear any of you asking any of your loyal sycophants the same question. Asked me why I listen to your show.
Right.
Did you not?
I did ask you that, and you said, as I recall, something like, because it was entertaining, which I took as a compliment.
That too. But actually, it's because I'm conscious, responsible, and try to do the right thing, and I try to think for myself. I actually, being
good on you, Whit,
devout Catholic, am also most concerned with what God wants. And
okay.
I also am calling to try to save your depraved soul for all the lies you're telling and the fear-mongering you're doing. I just listened to about 10 minutes of your show, and I would think our president is an evil Bush is Hitler-like, wouldn't you?
No, I really don't think he's evil. I think he's incompetent.
Incompetent, really?
Yeah,
okay,
I really
are
do.
Are you suggesting he doesn't care about Osama bin Laden? And that, did you suggest that the Bush family may have had Osama bin Laden's brother taken down in a plane over Texas?
No,
something
I wasn't
like that?
Suggesting that. However, a lot of people are very curious about that.
Why'd you bring it up then?
Well,
because a lot of people are curious about it?
Yeah, it's really, just a second ago, Whit, you just said, you asked me if I was suggesting that Bush didn't care about bin Laden. Here's Bush.
So I don't know where he is. I just don't spend that much time on him, I'll be honest with you. Again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
So, you know, there you go, Whit.
What a surprise, Tom. I never would have predicted you would have played that. What a surprise. Hey, Tom, may I respond to that?
You're on the air.
Okay, Tom. First of all, I don't expect one president of the United States to wake up every morning worried about Osama bin Laden. But again, are you suggesting he doesn't care whether or not Osama bin Laden is captured for having murdered 3,000 Americans? Or are you?
What I know, Whit, is that when
he's glad that he did it. So
what I know, Whit, is
in Iraq for oil.
What I know is that when Franklin Roosevelt was president and the United States was attacked by the Japanese, and a week later the Germans declared war on us, and we found ourselves having to fight a war in Europe as well as in Japan, that when Franklin Roosevelt was president, that he decided that Adolf Hitler represented a threat and Tojo represented a threat, and he got them both. He also decided that it was such a threat that his four sons all joined the military, and three of them served in combat. Now, I'm not seeing any of that kind of stuff from George W. Bush. Also, the period of time from Pearl Harbor till the end of World War II, VE Day, Roosevelt was dead by that time, Harry Truman was president, the period of time from Pearl Harbor to the end of World War II is greater than the period of time from 9/11 to today. So, yes, I think George W. Bush is incompetent.
Okay, first of all, can I respond to that and I'll hold, because you just said a lot, which is hilarious. But I remember you saying that, like I said before when I called your show, I wish one Franklin Delano Roosevelt had had the you-know-what to have done the right thing and declared war on Germany in September of 1939, and millions would have been saved. But then you retorted.
Yeah, Whit, I agree with you. The problem is that Whit, hold on just a second, Whit. The reality is that the president can't declare war. Congress declares war.
Oh, my gosh. The reality is that you walked into Congress.
Congress
and say, hey,
holds the sole power to declare war. And if you go back and you look at... Whit, you're not Sean Hannity. Don't try and filibuster me. Let me finish a sentence here. If you go back and you look at the congressional record, and Rex Stout wrote a great compilation of it called The Illustrious Dunderheads, you will discover that the Republicans in the House and the Senate made it very clear that they would not allow the United States to go into war against Europe. And it took Pearl Harbor to get us in there.
Okay, Tom, you're a fan of exit polls. Do you have any idea what polling suggested on December 6, 1941, how many Americans did not want the United States military in Germany?
Well, I know that the majority of Americans right now would like us to pull out of Iraq, but that's not happening because the Republicans control the House and the Senate.
90% of Americans did not want to go over there on December 6, 1941.
I'm sorry, say that again.
December 7, 1941 proved 100% of them wrong. Now, again, I'm for, and that is why I'm calling you, preemptive verbal wars as well as real world.
Well, if you're talking about war against Germany in 1939, that was not preemptive.
War against, I mean, that would have. That Kerry signs kill infidels because of cartoons.
Yeah, okay? We had.
I'm worried about people in Tehran that give candlelight vigils on September 12, 2001, who don't care that somebody is right behind them with a sign that says kill the infidels, okay?
Yeah, well, the reality is with that they weren't, that was not the situation in 2001. It just, the entire Arab world was very much on our side in 2001. They were looking at what had happened, and they were frankly horrified. All across the Muslim world, you had people coming out and saying, unambiguously, we don't want to have anything to do with this thing, this Osama bin Laden guy. And that sentiment lasted for months, by the way, until George W. Bush started whipping things up and turning and using the word crusade and things like that. It's way, way over the top here. It's just gone way over the top with what George W. Bush is into. Will in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Will, we have just a few seconds left. You get the last word.
Oh, okay. Hi there. Hey. Am I on?
You are on. We got five seconds.
Okay, I wanted to get your opinion about Bill O'Reilly's talking points last night. He basically was calling.
I'm sorry, Will. I thought you had a shorter point to make. I didn't see Bill O'Reilly. I don't watch Bill O'Reilly. I don't have any idea. I don't know. It's ain't gonna go there. I do have Bill O'Reilly in my audio around here someplace though. Yeah, there we go.
So. All those clowns over at the Liberal Radio Network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains? Because they, you know, they're undermining everything.
Okay, Alex and Dan, you're coming up. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friend. 6 minutes past the hour. Your light at the end of the talk. Tunnel of Talk Radio. Tom Hartman here with you. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff raised eyebrows today by announcing that the United States would outsource all of its homeland security operations to a little-known North Korean firm called Jim Kong Il, Inc., coming just days after the controversial decision to allow several major U.S. ports to be run by a company based in the United Arab Emirates. The outsourcing of the nation's homeland security functions to an obscure country based in an axis of evil country, obscure company, excuse me, struck some in Washington as ill-timed at best, but Mr. Chertoff vigorously defended the decision in a White House Washington press conference this afternoon, calling Jim Kong Il the right firm for the job, adding, I looked into the company and it seemed okay. That from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. Yeah, what can I say? It is a strange day. The stars have to be. I had this weirdest horoscope today. But in any case, Jeffrey Feldman is with us. Frameshopisopen.com, his website. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
You have a new frame. You are, in my mind, one of the leading experts on framing, certainly in the country, maybe in the world. Brilliant stuff that you're putting out at frameshopisopen.com on a regular basis. And you're suggesting a new frame that we should be tossing at the president and vice president with regularity.
Yeah, I mean, there's two incidents that I think are somewhat connected that have come up in the past week. I mean, everybody was talking about the vice president shooting this guy in the face last week. And the story that was hidden behind all the outrage about the secrecy and the PR attempt to cover up that incident was the convergence of two events. The Hurricane Katrina victims who were in temporary housing were actually slotted to be thrown out of their public housing on the Monday that the story about the vice president broke.
And they were thrown out, weren't they? Not?
They were thrown out. Their subsidies were taken away from them, and they were given essentially walking papers with a voucher in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing thing that was missed entirely by the media was that here you had a vice president who had gone off to enjoy a luxury vacation in which he had people catering to his every need at the exact same moment that Americans who were most in need were standing on the doorsteps with, you know, their belongings in hefty bags and not knowing where they were going. And, you know, Air Force Two would have flown almost directly over these incidents. And so, you know, the frame that I put forward is this idea of leadership first, then vacation, that we really need to talk about this recurrent pattern that we see out of the White House where the vice president and the president seem to just be completely indifferent to the concerns of the public going on vacation at times of need.
Yeah, and so has anybody picked up this frame?
No one has picked up on it. I keep on putting things out there. But interestingly, with the incident with this whole port scandal, which has really, you know, taken off like a firestorm in the past 24 hours, it's really remarkable. You find a very similar dynamic unfolding there. We have, you know, the entire House of Representatives virtually and the Congress and most of the American public literally rising up in outrage to discover that a security or a firm, private firm in the United Arab Emirates is going to be running major ports in this country. And in response to this outpouring of concern from the public, the president stands up and says, "Don't worry about it. You know, your concerns aren't really important. What's important is that we've taken care of this a while back. Now everybody just sit down, take a deep breath, and let us take care of all of this."
Yeah.
This idea that, you know, the public's concern really doesn't matter, a complete distance between the White House and the citizens.
And what's most strange about this is that Don Rumsfeld was on the commission that approved this thing, and he came out yesterday or day before yesterday and said, "I didn't know about this." And it was approved unanimously.
That's incredible.
I mean, it's like, you know, was he there? Is he taking the same memory pills that Pat Roberts is? I mean, you know, what's the deal here? But back to your frame of volunteer, I thought that there were some great variations on your frame of leadership first, then vacation. Volunteer, then vacation?
Yeah, I mean, I suggested that, you know, imagine if there was some type of, you know, whether it be a habit, a tradition, or even a regulation that was passed that requires, you know, the vice president or the president to actually show up at one of these volunteer sites before they go on vacation. And
that's what Jimmy Carter does.
What's that?
That's what Jimmy Carter does.
Yeah, what Jimmy Carter does, exactly. You know, stop by Habitat for Humanity, show your face, take some pictures, you know, lend the full force of the executive branch to one of these efforts by citizens to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps instead of just heading off to a 50,000-acre private resort with a few large donors and a few ambassadors for a private picnic.
Another way to frame this, you suggest, help first, shoot later.
Help first, shoot later, exactly. Cheney should reach out a helping hand before he goes off on a private vacation. Another idea, you know, serve others, then serve yourself. Or the very basic idea, you know, set aside some time. Set aside some time for, you know, the victims of the hurricane or of another a problematic situation in America before you go off and take care of your own needs.
We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman of FrameShopIsOpen.com, and FrameShopIsOpen.com, the website. And Jeffrey, the Bush administration, just before Cheney shot this old guy in the face, he was facing two really serious problems. He had Paul Pillar, the former CIA head of counterintelligence for the Near East, for Afghanistan, Iraq, for that region, coming out and saying, "We never told the Bush administration there's any connection between 9/11 and Osama, between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein." And although weirdly over the weekend, Orrin Hatch told a group of private supporters that anybody who thinks there's no connection between Iraq and 9/11 is crazy or something to that effect. So obviously the Republicans are still flogging that meme for all they can get out of it. But in any case, you had the CIA basically coming out and saying, or a guy from the CIA coming out and saying, Cheney lied to you. He lied to Congress. He lied to the United States. He lied to the international community. He lied to all of us citizens, number one. And he ignored the CIA. And perhaps he lied to Bush. I mean, who knows? And maybe even Colin Powell. And number two, you had his Cheney's former assistant, Scooter Libby, coming out and saying, we leaked these classified documents, but my boss told me to. And then after Cheney shot this old guy in the face, he goes on Fox News and he says, "Well, you know, I had the authority to declassify classified documents," and turns out that authority was given about the exact same time, back in March of, as I recall, 2003, that Joe Wilson was writing his piece for the New York Times. So, you know, a lot of, you know, putting two and two together looks pretty grim for Cheney here, and yet Cheney has reframed this.
Or has he?
I'm asking.
Well, what's interesting, on top of all this, that Cheney seems to recede into the background whenever these things, whenever the water starts to boil around him. There were, in addition to the things that you just mentioned, there were a lot of suggestions that maybe it was time for Cheney to resign following these incidents. And whenever these things things start to get bad for Cheney, he seems to completely vanish and disappear. I don't believe that Cheney reframed any of these accusations to make them, look less problematic than they were. I mean, that attempt to suggest that he was empowered by an executive order to essentially do whatever he wanted, with national security documents, was essentially dropped by the press rather than repeated over and over again. Mm-hmm. But he does have a gift for vanishing, and the Whittington, injury case, the shooting incident, provided him some temporary cover, and everything seems to have been raked over by that, and then we went right into this port scandal.
Yeah, now with the port scandal, in my mind, there are really two very real issues with regard to the port scandal. The first is that the Bush administration has done nothing to secure our ports. Here we are 4 years after 9/11. And the second is that the Bush administration has done nothing but speed up the rate at which the assets of the United States, now roughly 20% of all of our industrial infrastructure, are being sold off to and owned by foreign companies and in many cases, foreign governments. Neither of those frames, as it were, seem to be getting much traction. What do you think?
Well, I think that what you say is absolutely right. I mean, the Bush administration, they keep on saying this was a good business deal. We checked out this business. They're a business that plays by the rules. But the American public looks at this port deal, and they see issues of safety and security. And it seems that only President Bush and his White House cabinet do not see our ports yet as sites where we need to be concerned with safety and security first. The UAE deal, it seems like a sweetheart deal given to this firm, DP World, in response for their loyalty to the Bush White House, and the entire American public standing up and saying, wait a minute, the UAE has ties to September 11, and this is something that is a real concern to us. I think that people are concerned that that this port is in charge of people who have really no idea how to manage safety or security at all, and it's going to result in another Katrina-type disaster.
Except that these guys manage ports all over the world. In a way, isn't this kind of a frame that has run amok unexpectedly?
It has. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch. Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com, his website. Check it out, my friends. You'll find a lot of great stuff there. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. It's absolutely remarkable how they're able to pull this thing together. It's 16 minutes past the hour in the Tom Hartmann radio program, where despair is not an option.
This is the Tom Hartmann program.
It's trying to break. You see my heart, you look away. You see my wrist, I know your pain. I know your purpose on your plane.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartmann radio program. Rumsfeld, I am reluctant to make judgments based on the minimal amount of information I have because I just heard about this over the weekend. Rumsfeld, the guy who is on the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States, which unanimously approved on February 13th the sale of P&O to Dubai Ports World. Very strange. Greg Gorman of Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Greg, what do you make of this?
Hey, Tom, how about this? How about Scott McClellan just 10 minutes ago in the White House briefing saying that every single cabinet member who was told about this deal had absolutely no problem with it?
And
not
yet,
one cabinet member who was told, and they were all told about this deal, not one of them had a problem with it, nor did any of the 12 agencies.
So is he saying that
for approving these deals?
So is he saying that Rumsfeld is lying, or that he's senile?
Or is Rumsfeld saying, "Hey, Scott McClellan, you're a big liar"?
Oh, that's interesting. Except McClellan spoke after Rumsfeld.
Exactly.
So,
and I mean, so Well, I'm not sure what Tom Rumsfeld spoke. If this is just now the White House briefing, this was probably 10 minutes ago. I was just listening on our ISDN line to the White House briefing. And so that's
What I have is this is from thinkprogress.org, and they say in a press briefing today, and I believe this is the dateline on this. Let me just take a quick look at it and find out for you whether it's today or yesterday. Department of Disenfranchisement. Yeah, it's, well, they don't date the, oh, here it is, yeah, posted February 21. Is that today?
That's yesterday.
That's yesterday, okay.
Thomas Wellen is now saying, in contrary, I guess, to Donald Rumsfeld, who is a cabinet member, if we all think about it, he is. So,
yeah.
You know, Scott McClellan is saying every cabinet member. And, you know, the other interesting thing about this, Tom, is we now know that the president was not really even aware of this deal until after it happened. So now that he's talking about vetoing legislation, he wasn't even kept in the loop. He didn't even know what was going on in this deal.
Which raises another interesting question. I know during the Clinton administration, whenever the cabinet met, the president was there.
Yes, that's usually how it works.
I mean, Bill Clinton was obsessive about it.
In a room called the cabinet room, which is
right.
You know, crazy, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, this story is just going to get, you know, stranger and stranger and stranger. And, you know, Scott McClellan in the briefing now, you know, was really trying to say, look, we have to hold Middle Eastern companies to the same standard that we hold everyone, you know, every other country in the world. And he made the point, he took Helen Thomas to task over this. She tried to say, you know, why don't we own our own ports? And Scott said, no, we own them. And she said, okay, fine, you know, manage. No, you know, we manage. Run then, Scott. You know, what word do you want me to use to say, why don't we take care of this on our own? And he would not let her, you know, make the point. He's saying, look, in essence, this new company, Dubai Ports, is really going to be controlling the terminals. They're going to be, you know, trying to manage the forklifts, and all the security will still be under the thumb of the U.S. All the cargo will still be, you know, watched.
Except it's not being right now. I mean, that's the big thing. Only 5% of the cargo is being examined right now.
It's a stretch. And you know what? You're right. It's a stretch for him to say that.
And you know, I'm amazed that it's Helen Thomas attacking him about this. And the right, I mean, I believe it was Ann Coulter. It was one of these right-wing weirdos. It might have been Michelle Malkin who attacked Helen Thomas, calling her an old Arab because she's of Lebanese ancestry.
Right, that's right, she is.
And, you know, so it's like, you know, defying the stereotypes of the right here.
Well, that's right.
But the fact of the matter is that we've got, you know, 90% of our ports are already foreign-owned, at least on the West Coast they are, and I believe most of them on the East Coast.
Right,
we're not talking about that. We're not talking about U.S. ports being sold to a foreign company. We're talking about foreign-owned ports being sold to a foreign-owned company in the United States. The bigger question should be, why the hell are we allowing our ports to be sold to anybody ever under any circumstances? And the answer to that goes back to this bizarre notion of globalization.
Well, right. Actually, I was just reading a story about the globalization of ports, not just in this country, but around the world.
Right.
It's something that happens. It's in existence. And, you know, that's what Scott McClellan was trying to say, in that, look, it's still, you know, run by the U.S., we still do security, and the Coast Guard is, you know, is still in charge. But
which
know,
is another way of saying,
we all know that's not the way it is.
Yeah, which is another way of saying, Greg, that the company that owns the port gets to make all the profit from moving the stuff through, but the expense of the port, the security, the management of the security, the inspection of the, we're going to pay all that with tax dollars.
And Tom, that's exactly why the questions are now switching from when did the president know about this deal to what does the president have to gain in this deal? There's always a money trail. It's just now starting to be talked about. Why is the president so staunch in his support? And why is he saying that he will veto any legislation to put this deal on hold? Is there a money trail? Is he somehow going to benefit? Is the administration going to somehow benefit?
Well, the answer is very simple. He's a corporatist. I mean, just like his father was, just like Ronald Reagan was, just like Bill Clinton was, for that matter. They all believe that it's better for multinational corporations to be making the decisions of the world than for sovereign nations to be. And if multinational corporation, if something is going to work out in the best interest of a multinational corporation and the citizens of a country don't like it, tough.
Well, that seems to be exactly the way he's going, and that's exactly what, you know, unless there's some smoking gun that he's going to, you know, personally profit, which, you know, we haven't
I doubt that, although it wouldn't surprise me if his father's portfolio contains some stock for this company. But I still, you know, I think this is doctrinaire. These guys believe that selling off America is a good thing, and there's a whole bunch of us, oddly enough, a lot of conservatives as well, who don't believe that it's a good thing. But that part of this meme is not being brought out yet. It's still all the, oh my God, it's the Arabs, you know, which is really the most awful and essentially racist end of it. Greg Gorman with Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Greg. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. By the way, California looks like virtually 100% public opposition to Diebold machines in California, according to some sources and polls. But nonetheless, it looks like the new Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, is going to certify Diebold's entire line, hackable touchscreens, hackable optical scanners, extremely hackable GEMS tabulators, despite 100% public opposition and numerous attacks proving the system's flaws and insecurities. And so the over at Daily Kos, they're asking people to get active and make some phone calls. So I encourage you to check that out, dailykos.com. And you can get all the details there, who to call if you're in the state of California. Don Pereira, the chairman, Senator Jim Batten. These are all state-level officials. Jim Batten, Senator Roy Ashburn, Senator Deborah Bowen, and Senator Gilbert Sedillo, apparently, are these are the main swing ones. So for our I think we're on five stations in California. For our California listeners, that's something. That's a heads up. A couple of heads up. These are the kind of things that you're not quite sure. You know, I'm going to toss a caveat in here. You know, at the top of the hour, I started out with a Borowitz report. You know, about Chertoff saying that he was outsourcing our port security to a company, North Korea. That was obviously tongue in cheek. These are not. These are stories that are being presented as straight up news stories, but I can't vouch for them as straight-up news stories because I haven't done the personal investigation on them, and they haven't been picked up by the mainstream media. And that doesn't mean that they're not real. The first comes from Capitol Hill Blue. Capitol Hill Blue is perceived by some as sort of the National Enquirer of lefty blogs, but maybe not. I mean, this is Doug Thompson, the publisher. They've broken some real stories over there at Capitol Hill Blue. So Doug Thompson writes, Dateline today, a written report from Secret Service agents guarding Vice President Dick Cheney when he shot Texas lawyer Harry Whittington on a hunting outing 2 weeks ago says Cheney was, quote, clearly inebriated, end quote, at the time of the shooting. Agents observed several members of the hunting party, including the vice president, consuming alcohol before and during the hunting expedition, the report notes, and Cheney exhibited, quote, visible signs of impairment, including slurred speech and erratic actions, the report said. Going on, he says, according to those who have read the report and talked with others who were present at the outing, Chairman Cheney was drunk when he gunned down his friend, and the day and a half delay in allowing Texas law enforcement officials on the ranch where the shooting occurred gave all members of the hunting party time to sober up. We talked to the number of administration officials who are privy to inside information on the vice president's shooting accident, and all admit Secret Service agents and others saw Cheney consume far more than the one beer he claimed he drank at lunch earlier that day. This was a South Texas hunt, says one White House aide. Of course there was drinking. There's always drinking. Lots of it. And then he goes on to point out Cheney has a long history of alcohol abuse, including two convictions of driving under the influence, something I shared with you way back when it first happened. They say if Cheney was legally drunk at the time of shooting, he could be guilty of a felony under Texas law, and the shooting would be a prosecutable offense. By the way, Salinas, the county sheriff, Kennedy County, talk about ironies. Kennedy County Sheriff Salinas, who agreed when his deputy showed up and got turned away at the gate the evening after the shooting, as Dick Cheney's back there having his cocktail, according to his official reports. Doug Thompson notes, like all elected officials in Kennedy County, Salinas owes his job to the backing and financial support of Catherine Armstrong, owner of the 50,000-acre ranch and the county's largest employer. The Armstrongs rule Kennedy County like a fiefdom, says a former employee. Secret Service officials also took possession of all tests on Whittington's blood at the hospitals where he was treated for his wounds. When asked if a blood alcohol test had been performed on Whittington, the doctors who treated him at Corpus Christi Memorial Hospital in Corpus Christi or the hospital in Kingsville refused to answer. One admits privately he was ordered by the Secret Service to, quote, never discuss the case with the press, end of quote. So that'll be that's an interesting one. We'll see if that gets any traction. And the other is a story. David, did you find any backup on this thing? It's up here.
Oh,
On the Iraq story?
No.
Oh, okay. You'll recall, this is the mainstream story. Here's Reuters published this today, in fact. Here's, gunman entered Samarra's Golden Mosque at dawn on Wednesday and set off charges that destroyed the dome. Now, this is a major holy site with this giant golden dome on this mosque. The Golden Dome is one of the four Shiite shrines in Iraq. It's one of the four most holy sites in Shiite Islam. The others are in Najaf, Karbala, and in the Baghdad district of Qadamiya. Two of the 12 revered Shiite imams are buried in the shrine. Imam Ali al-Hadi, who died in 868 AD, and his son, the 11th Imam Hassan al-Asakari, who died in 874, are buried there. Now, this is you know, just 100 years after the Prophet showed up, after Muhammad showed up. Shiites believe the 12th Imam, Imam Mehdi, known as the Hidden Imam, went into hiding from a cellar in the complex in 878 AD. Shiites say he will return before the Day of Judgment to return justice to a world full of oppression. Okay. And in their epistemology, in the Shiite epistemology, the skies above the city of Baghdad will turn to fire when the Hidden Imam returns. Okay. So that happened, and this is causing, I mean, this, you talk about civil war. Here you've got one of the holiest Shiite sites being blown up. This is like, you know, you look at the Protestant Catholic wars in Ireland for years, and you, I mean, this is far worse than anything I recall ever happening there. And now comes this story. Now, this is out of the Russian media. Okay, so again, I can't vouch for this. This is from the Russian media, from the Mirror World, which is published out of Russia. Iraqis, this is Dateline this morning, Iraqis apprehended two Americans disguised as Arabs trying to detonate a car bomb in a residential neighborhood of western Baghdad's Al-Ghazaliya district on Tuesday. A number of Iraqis apprehended two Americans disguised in Arab dress as they tried to blow up a booby-trapped car in the middle of a residential area in western Baghdad on Tuesday. Now, the reason that I share that story with you, without knowing if there's any corroboration for it, is the fact that it has hit the press in Russia means it is going to be picked up by the press throughout the Muslim world, certainly in the Arab world. And they're going to put two and two together. It may not, I mean, you know, they may come up with five. It may not be the God forbid it's the correct answer. But here we've got, no Sunnis so far have taken responsibility for blowing up this Shia shrine. I mean, nobody, to the best of my knowledge, so far, I haven't seen on the wire services where anybody has taken responsibility for this act that could be the kickoff, the major kickoff act of a religious civil war in Iraq. But it's happened. And later in the day, it's reported in the Russian press that Americans disguised as Arabs are trying to detonate car bombs in Baghdad. Residents of western Baghdad's Al-Ghazaliya district told Quds Press that the people had apprehended the Americans as they left their Caprice car near a residential neighborhood in Al-Ghazaliya on Tuesday afternoon. Local people found they looked suspicious, so they detained the men before they could get away. That was when they were discovered that they were Americans and called the Iraqi puppet police. Now, this is, if they're calling the Iraqi police puppet police, it's obviously from the opposition press, right? 5 minutes after the arrival of the Iraqi puppet police on the scene, a large force of U.S. troops showed up and surrounded the area. They put the two Americans in one of their Humvees and drove away at high speed to the astonishment of the residents of the area. So, you know, as I said, I don't give this, frankly, I don't give this report a lot of credibility. But the fact that it's hit the wires, I can talk about this in the United States. You know, this is a talk radio show. But here it is in a newspaper in Europe. And it's going to, and that's going to cause it to get picked up in the Arab world, and it's just going to fan the flames of paranoia and anti-Americanism. This is truly, truly scary. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jeff in Eatonsville, Washington, on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind?
Hi, you're talking about port security. Great show.
Thank you.
Okay, here in Seattle, on I believe it was September of 2003, while watching Como News. It was a Sunday, not much of a big news day, and they showed like 10-15 minute show about two ships being hijacked in Indonesian waters. They weren't U.S. owned, and they were really borrowed for 4 hours. One was full of ammonia nitrate, you know, this stuff they used to blow up the Oklahoma.
Right, the fertilizer that if you add kerosene to it.
And the other one was full of natural gas. Over there, they don't have pipelines to the islands. They put them in globe-like containers and tank them there.
Right.
Okay, but they didn't blow them up. They were on one ship for 4 hours, drove it around. On the second ship, two people fought back, and they paid with their lives.
Right.
The other ones were just tied up and released. And after they learned how to drive it, basically, they left. It was reported by a lady.
You mean they hijacked these giant tanker ships to learn how to pilot them?
Yeah. And she reported it on the news. And I waited for it to show up at the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, checked all the other local stations, nothing. 11 o'clock, the same. So Monday morning, I called the station. At 9 a.m., I got lucky. I talked to the lady who did the story. She actually answered her phone.
Yeah.
And she says, hey, there's not going to be anything more about it. I was told to take it off the air. I'm sorry, I can't get you a copy of it. That's what I was after. She was going to replay it so I could videotape it.
Yeah. So,
so somebody higher than her boss told her.
This is the equivalent of Colleen Rowley saying, hey, we found this guy up here in Minneapolis taking flight lessons. He wants to learn how to take off and land a 757, but he doesn't care how to fly it. Or he wants to know how to fly a 757. He doesn't care about how to take off or land it. Shouldn't we be worried about this? And the FBI saying, shut up and go back to your desk.
Yeah, that's why I'm so glad you're talking about port security, living in the Seattle-Tacoma area.
Yeah.
You've got ships coming in and out.
And right, it's absolutely amazing. Jeff, thank you. Thanks a lot for the tip. Jeez. We will see what we can do in tracking that one down as well. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. It's 45 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome. You gotta believe that right here, right now, you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. If you want to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there. It is T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's. Our phone number, 866-440-THOM. And Joy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Joy.
I wanted the background noise, you know.
No, that doesn't sound like Joy. I'm going
to
put that one. We've got our weird thing with our board going on here. Joy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Joy. Joy, can you hear me? She can't. Let's try this here. Will in Sacramento. Hey, Will.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
First time caller here. I was wondering under what authority is Bush using, what authority is he using to issue contracts to non-U.S. companies or countries? I understand it's not a treaty, right? And so I was wondering, I thought Commerce Department was the only people that could issue contracts.
You're assuming that we own the ports. We don't.
The states don't own the ports.
That's correct. So the question becomes, at what point in time were the ports privatized? And I've been trying to find the answer to that for 2 days, and I have not yet been able to find that out.
Is there some unitary power that he's claiming, or is there?
No, it's got nothing to do with that. At some point in the past, these various communities around the country, and whether this was originally claimed as federal government or whether it was originally claimed as state land, I frankly don't know, and it's what I'm trying to find out. At some point in the past, ports, which presumably were publicly owned, although maybe they've been privately owned all along, maybe, you know, the first settlers to stake them out said, this is mine, and their ancestors have held them for 300 years. At some point, those ports, the chunks of land in those ports. For example, in the port of Newark, there are 6 different places where ships can unload, and 2 of them are owned right now by the communist Chinese. 1 of them is going to be sold to this company based in Dubai. And so at some point in time, those individual pieces of land that we call ports were sold to private entities, and those private entities have been buying and selling them amongst each other ever since. 90% of the ports on the West Coast are foreign-owned right now, for example.
Cities don't own those. No,
apparently not. Apparently not.
I heard a rumor.
Now
back
the cities may own the waterways, but go ahead.
I heard a rumor back some time ago that a company called COFCO. Is that the Chinese company you're talking about? Own the port down there by Los Angeles.
Yeah, I don't have the whole list, but there was a controversy around the Chinese buying the Long Beach port, or a good chunk of the Long Beach port. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, Peter DeFazio was one of only 15 members of Congress to vote against it. And see, that's the thing. I mean, these guys, they've all drunk the free trade Kool-Aid there's nothing wrong with selling off our country. There's nothing wrong with what's wrong with it fundamentally, just from a purely economic point of view, is that if there's profit to be made in the ports, do you want that profit to go back to Dubai, where it's going to help them build new buildings and build new companies and all that kind of thing? Or do you want that profit to stay here in the United States?
If you
want
to just... taxpayers are paying for it indirectly, yes.
Yeah, well, and in fact, I'd say the taxpayers are paying for it big time, because with the ports in particular, this is a classic case of corporations internalizing profit and externalizing expense. The expense to operate a port is the security. Are these corporations paying for that security? No. Is the cargo that's going through these ports being paid, being taxed to pay for that security? No. You and I are paying for that security through the Department of Homeland Security and the Coast Guard, which comes out of the general budget of the United States. So
Congress could nationalize these ports. Couldn't we take our ports back from,
yes,
from these companies?
Oh, Congress has the Fifth Amendment provides the right of eminent domain. We can nationalize anything. We just have to have the money to pay for it.
Because like Iran did that when we used to steal their oil through the Shah, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's what Chavez did in Venezuela, too, that so, upset all the conservatives all around the planet, is he nationalized the oil supply of Venezuela and said, this belongs to the people, and the money from it, a large chunk of the money from it, is going to go to fund anti-poverty projects and to feed people and housing. And the people of Venezuela then reelected him. They said, hey, this is cool, but the oil companies are really, really upset. And the big oil barons, Condi Rice, who has an oil tanker named after her, Bush and Cheney, all these big oil barons, they're very angry, and they're running around talking, oh, we got to get Chavez and all this kind of stuff. And Pat Robertson with his diamond mines in Africa, going after. But anyhow, the bottom line is, no, I think these ports are all private property, and I don't think that we have the ability to nationalize them now simply because we don't have the cash and we don't have the political will. And what you're seeing here, William, is a symptom of how the selling off of America has been going on ever since Ronald Reagan, and it's been picking up speed dramatically. It's what I was talking about yesterday, and that's the big issue here in my mind, not just this. Got to move along. Yeah, thank you very much for the call. It's good to hear from you. Mina in St. Paul, Nebraska. Mina?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Appreciate your common sense view on politics. And I, too, am a first-time caller. This is basically for Dale and Kearney.
Mm-hmm.
There are several peace groups in central Nebraska. There's Kearney Area Peace Group, Central Nebraska Peace Workers, and Nebraskans for Peace. For information, he can go to www.centralnebraskapeaceworkers.org, and it will have references to all the peace groups.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mina.
We are meeting Sunday.
Okay. Mina, thanks for the heads up. I appreciate it. Geronimo in Old Orchard Beach, Maine.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Geronimo, we have about half a minute left.
You were talking about port security and P&O. Despite talk of Arab foreigners, if that's what they really are, they just paid money for an intact British business, which hasn't changed personnel or methods. So
that's my point. This is not about security. This is about who owns America.
So somebody please check if P&O is the same British company that was responsible for security at Boston Logan Airport up until September 11, 2001, when Al-Qaeda hijacked two jumbo jets from there and smashed them into the World Trade Towers, because a Boston Phoenix newspaper did an investigative piece on bad security before 9/11. And then had a conference call with George Bush's Federal Aviation Administration and Logan Airport and the British firm, all of whom assured the editor and reporter that security would be improved, including scrutiny of what passengers take aboard with them. That was 2 weeks before 9/11, so is P&O the same British company?
That's a good question. We'll look into that. And Geronimo, if you find anything out about that, just drop me an email at tom@tomhartman.com.
Right, thanks.
Okay? Thanks. Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC. I got to tell you about what Christoph is doing, Nicholas Christoph, with Bill O'Reilly when we come back from this break. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for our rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. Yes, time for a conservative alert. Bill O'Reilly is at it again. In a postscript to his regular New York Times column on Tuesday, Nicholas Kristof reveals that he has raised almost $750,000 from readers to send Fox News host Bill O'Reilly to troubled Darfur. Kristof. This is great. This is from editor and publisher. Kristof, embroiled in a public feud with O'Reilly, launched a pledge drive recently with this end in mind, and reports that he has been deluged with 6,675 pledges, averaging a bit over $100. The grand total comes to $727,568. So Mr. O'Reilly will be able to fly first class with the very best satellite phones and fill his water bottles with San Pellegrino. O'Reilly has called Kristof's pledge drive simply a gimmick, a ploy to bring on my name to his passion. Yeah. Kristof, according to O'Reilly, he says, this is what O'Reilly says of Kristof. He says, he couldn't care less if I traveled to Darfur. He should direct his ire at the UN. Earlier, Kristof had announced he would ante up, the first $1,000 to bring O'Reilly to Africa. Presumably the ticket would be round trip. This whole thing began last December when O'Reilly on one of his programs called Kristof a left-wing ideologue. Kristof replied by calling O'Reilly a bully and challenging O'Reilly to show truly traditional values by joining him on a visit to Darfur to assess the death and devastation there, thereby, as Kristof suggested, using your talents for an important cause. O'Reilly then hit back at Kristof, calling him absolutely clueless and adding that the New York Times columnist has no idea what's happening in the country. Kristof revealed recently that he got his answer to his earlier offer to take O'Reilly to Darfur. This is apparently what O'Reilly sent him. I don't know if this is an email or what. O'Reilly says, I do 3 hours of daily news and analysis on TV and radio. There's no way I can go to Africa. But, you know, Kristof observed with a satellite phone, you can do your show from anywhere. I mean, things happen around the world. People show up there. I mean, you've got the correspondent for the ABC Evening News, CBS, NBC. Something happens in Jerusalem. They're in Jerusalem. Something happens in New Orleans. They're in New Orleans. Something happens you name the place, they're there. Hurricanes in Indonesia. Boom. They get on a plane. They know how to use it. Come on, Bill. You know about satellite phones, don't you? Don't you?
Well, the shut-up line has happened only once in 6 years.
You want to know what I'm doing?
Shut up.
Quiet!
Listen, you cut his mic.
No,
that's shut up.
Now
you had your 35 minutes. Shut up.
And it is our duty as loyal Americans to shut up
and shut up publicly. We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up. Okay. So you keep your mouth shut.
In a democracy, you don't have to shut up. Speak up.
Yeah, well said. So that's our O'Reilly alert for the day. Don Rumsfeld, this is amazing. George W. Bush this morning comes out and says, after yesterday, Bush is defending we need to sell this port because, the conservative thing to do, the whole con, global economics, globalist, the world is flat, Thomas Friedman, you read that book, right? The thing to do is to sell off America. It's just a fine thing if we sell off America. It doesn't seem to be flying. Even though it's a British company being sold to a company from the UAE, it still doesn't seem to be flying because Bush has spent the last 4.5 years telling Americans,
be afraid, be very afraid. Look out, duck, look out, it's coming.
Be afraid, yeah. September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive.
That's enough of that. Anyhow, so what we have now, today, the AP alert comes down the wire. As an alert, Bush says,
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Yeah, Bush, absolutely. No, I was the last to learn about it. Although the cabinet met about it. They were all fully informed, according to Scotty McClellan today. Don Rumsfeld is a member of the cabinet, but 2 days ago he said, In answer to a question, are you confident that any problems with security, from what you know, would not be greater with a UAE company running this than an American company? Rumsfeld says, I'm reluctant to make judgments based on the minimal amount of information I have because I just heard about this over the weekend. Say what? Not only is he a member of the cabinet, he's also a member of the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States. This is the committee that ruled on whether or not this should be allowed and that unanimously decided back on February 13th that this was an okay thing. Now he doesn't remember. Maybe he needs some of Pat Roberts' memory pills. Who knows? Amy in San Diego, California. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program.
Tom, first I want to tell you thank you so much for yesterday. You were playing so much Tom Petty music. It was so wonderful. I could hear liberal talk and Tom Petty, my two favorite things.
Oh, great. You're welcome. thank Louise in particular. She puts together the bumper music and does a great job with it.
Oh, yes, she does. Ask her to squeeze an American girl once in a while.
Okay, well, I suspect she's listening.
What I wanted to ask you was, I don't understand, England was in charge of our ports before this transaction?
Not England.
Oh.
A company based in the United Kingdom called P&O. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they own ports in Australia, they own ports in India, they own ports in China, they own ports in the United States, own and operate ports. And that entire company is being bought by this company based out of Dubai, one of the seven emirates that makes up the United Arab Emirates.
Okay.
And the problem that people have with this, the people who are sufficiently thoughtful to get beyond the hysteria of the fact that they're Arabs or they have, you know, brown skin or whatever,
right,
is that they're Muslim, is that the British company was not owned by the British government. It was not a government-owned company. The British company was owned by stockholders just like any other company anywhere in the world. In fact, you could probably buy stock in it. It's a publicly traded company. The company, Dubai Ports World, or Dubai World Port, yeah, Ports World, is a company entirely owned by the royal family of this one particular emirates. In other words, the emirate, right?
Right.
These are kingdoms. There are seven kingdoms that make up what we would call kingdoms. They would call them emirates,
right,
that make up the United Arab Emirates. And this company is entirely owned by one family. That family also owns the country. I mean, it's a kingdom. If you live in that country,
right,
you are the property of this family.
Right.
And so you have essentially a government-owned company. And that's the relatively fine but not insignificant distinction that folks like, oddly enough, Bill Frist are making, is that, you know, it's okay with them if we sell off our ports to private corporations, although as a caller in the previous hour made the interesting point, you know, the P&O.
That bothers me tremendously, too.
Bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
But now they're saying, but we really don't want to be selling off our ports to corporations that are owned by other governments. Now, if that's the case, if Bill Frist really believes that, then he should be examining the many ports around the United States, and the numbers are still coming in. We're still slowly figuring this stuff out. We know, for example, for sure, the port of Long Beach, California.
Yeah.
The other ports in the United States that are owned by companies that are owned by the Chinese government.
Wow.
The Chinese government, which actually has nuclear weapons and has actually threatened to use them against the United States. The Chinese government that our Pentagon this year in their defense preparedness assessment or whatever they call this thing, the annual, you know, who do we have to worry about in the world, placed communist China as the number one country that we have to worry about militarily, you know, potentially down the road and should be planning for and preparing for. They own, you know, Chinese-owned companies own some of our ports, too. Although people tend not to be as concerned about that because they see that made in China and all the stuff in Walmart.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, I think you need to do a show sometime that shows all the different things, the parts of our country that are owned by private companies. Or
yeah, I did a better part of a half hour on that yesterday.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I missed it.
That's okay. It gets old fast because it's like reading long lists. But yeah, it's absolutely. This is about the selling off of America, Amy, and in my mind,
awesome.
You know, there are security issues here, but in my mind, the security issue is not, you know, is it an Arab government or something like that. In my mind, the security issue is that we the taxpayers are paying for the security,
yes,
which should be part of the cost of operating a port.
Absolutely.
And the corporation gets to make all the profit. And where is that profit going? It's going back to Dubai to build businesses and create jobs there. It's not staying here in this country because it's not owned by American companies.
Right.
And that's just fine with the flat worlders.
Right. I don't get this at all. It's just every day I get more upset. And it's just like the NSA thing where, you know, the Republicans were all up in arms just with the Democrats. And then, you know, a few arm twistings from Karl Rove and now they're all fine with it. So I think that's going to happen to this as well.
Oh, yeah. What they're going to do, there's a provision in the law for a 45-day delay on this thing. And they're going to figure out a way to invoke that, and they're just going to hope that over the month and a half it goes away and everybody basically comes to the conclusion, which is essentially correct, that we're responsible for port security. And I keep saying, no, there's a bigger issue here. And, you know, hopefully someday somebody will pick up on that, but who knows. Amy, thanks for the call. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Welcome back to our program, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Larry Scott with VAWatchdog.org is with us. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello once again, Tom.
Great to have you with us. The American Psychiatric Association has come out and offered their opinion on the quality of services in the VA mental health services. Tell us about this.
Well, I can do no better than they can. Let me quote exactly from the American Psychiatric Association. This was testimony given before a health subcommittee on Capitol Hill just a few days ago. The APA, the American Psychiatric Association, says of the VA, for too long, mental health care has not been a priority for the VA. The shortage of physicians and other mental health professionals has compromised the delivery of health care and has endangered patient safety.
Pretty straightforward.
Yes, they did everything but light a fire in the hearing room with a piece of testimony like this. This is what veterans and veterans advocates and many of the veterans service organizations have been saying for years, that mental health needs, especially as it comes to PTSD and other trauma issues, have been almost overlooked by the VA. And the APA is right there. They're the people on the front lines. They see what's happening. They know what's happening. And they're telling the VA, put the money into it and start caring for these people.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see any change coming out of this? Is there going to be any consequence to this, or is this just, you know, more?
Do you want an honest read on that?
Yeah, please.
It'll be taken as just another piece of testimony by just another organization who advocate for veterans. And those who control the purse strings will give a predetermined amount of money to VA health care, including mental health care, and we'll go on with more of the same.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Although we shouldn't expect anything else with this Bush administration. I mean, the Republicans in Congress, the Republicans in the House of Representatives, Republicans in the Senate who control the agenda, they control every piece of legislation that comes to the floor. They control what gets voted on, when it gets voted on, how much time people have to read a bill before it gets voted on. In many cases, less than 3 hours. The $400 billion defense appropriation bill, they gave them 3 hours to read it before they had to vote on it, for example.
And legislation to help veterans, too, just gets shuffled off into a committee or voted down quietly. You never hear about it. There's a great piece of legislation right now that's trying to work its way through the House that, my congressman, Brian Baird from the state of Washington, is one of the co-sponsors on, and it has to do with PTSD, not only diagnosis and treatment in the field, but treatment at the VA level.
Now, this is post-traumatic stress disorder, and Brian Baird is an ex-psychologist, is he not?
He's a clinical psychologist who, prior to being elected to the House of Representatives, worked at the VA.
Yeah, so he knows.
PTSD patient, he knows. And this just sits there. It's not going anywhere right now, and it's really a shame, because here's a person who cares, and there are a lot of other co-sponsors on this bill who care about veterans and see the trauma issues that our veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan are facing. And this type of legislation just keeps getting shoved to the side. Or we hear other things. We hear we don't have the money. We've only got so much money. These are all the resources that we can apply here. And the other one, and you're going to start hearing more and more of this, in veterans' health care is taking from other parts of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're saying is there's a finite amount of dollars.
Right. It's the zero-sum game mentality.
And exactly. And what happens?
And that actually is part of their Star of the Beast, you know, practices. If they could give enough tax cuts to enough millionaires and billionaires, it would cut the amount of cash available to the point where there would only be money left over for the programs that they want to have.
Right, and they can starve it, and that's the whole concept, the Grover Norquist, let's drown it in the bathtub concept.
Right.
With the tax cuts, they can legitimately stand up and say, we only have so many dollars, and we've got to spread them out over programs. But we take a look at these are ridiculous tax cuts. Folks, if you're going to take care of your veterans or if you're going to take care of the elderly, the poor, children, we're going to have to tax ourselves to do it, Tom.
Have no intention of taking care of anybody.
No, they don't.
I mean, you've got people who, I mean, like George W. Bush, who was born with a multi-million dollar trust fund, and every single time he killed off a business, he got Osama bin Laden's brother bailed out one of his businesses, friends of his father bailed out another one of his businesses. When he wanted to get out of the National Guard, he simply said, "May I get out 6 months early?" And they said, "Sure." I mean, can you imagine a guardsman today saying that?
No. As a matter of fact, that wouldn't happen today. It just wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And they are truly starving the beast here, so, you know, to speak. I look at this as a social contract. You know, as you understand, my priority here is veterans, you know, working with VAWatchdog.org. But it's a social contract we have with our veterans. We've asked them to serve. They've gone and served their country. And now they get abandoned when they come back home. And what we see now is what the VA is doing is they are prioritizing care, because this is good public relations, for the veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan. These people are going to the front of the line, and there's not a veteran in the world that will have a complaint about that. They'll say, you know, these kids coming out of battle who are wounded, they need the care, they need it first.
But we shouldn't have to ration care.
But what happens is that pushes other guys out the back door. That
right.
pushes other veterans out the back door who can't get the health care, Tom.
Right. People can learn more about this at VAWatchdog.org. Larry Scott. Larry, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And please, when you contact your members of Congress, no matter what the topic may be, point out to them that the Veterans Administration needs more funding. Our veterans need to be taken care of. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. In contrast to many bloggers, blogs, Faiz at the thinkprogress.org blog, he says, in contrast to many bloggers, I believe the bipartisan cry that our national security has been outsourced to the United Arab Emirates is misguided. Well, I've been telling you that on this program. He says, the fact that the argument is gaining steam underscores the reality that politicians can still successfully politicize 9/11 by using the manipulative politics of fear. Yes, agreed. He goes on to say that this really issue doesn't have anything to do with national security and a lot more to do with politics. That xenophobic conservatives have found allies with liberals, he says. They're looking for any opening to criticize Bush on national security, and they think that by outflanking Bush to the right on this issue, they can sound tougher and stronger. You have not been hearing that rhetoric on this program, by the way. He then goes on to say, and this is where my eyes are like bugging out of my eyes as I'm looking at the thinkprogress.org blog, and I sure hope that David Sirota writes in and straightens these guys up. He says, we have instead been largely engaged in a disingenuous debate. Well, that's what I've been telling you for 2 days, for two weeks, actually. He says, following the lead of President Jimmy Carter, progressives can and should embrace the reality of globalization and accept that our more interconnected world affords us an opportunity to build mutual respect and understanding. Bull. I'm sorry, Faiz, you are wrong. The globalization is simply a thinly disguised way of saying, let's turn the world over to multinational corporations. It is absolutely without morality. It is absolutely without benefit to individual nations. And if that makes me a nationalist or a populist, I know for the globalization set, these are bad words, but I will cop to it because I believe that at its core, the basic human instinct is family and community and tribe, and nation is an expression of that. And people get together in nations and they say, this is the way that we're going to live here in the United States. We're going to have a representative democracy. If Mexico is run with 36 dysfunctional families as an oligarchy, that's their problem. Let them deal with their problem. If the United Arab Emirates is seven ancient tribal families, they basically were, you know, nomadic tribes who lived in that area. And because of oil wealth, they've become seven kingdoms, where you have literally seven emirates, they call them, seven royal families, and they got together and formed the United Arab Emirates. You know, they could do that. They can run their country the way they want. They could say women can't vote, or they can. You know, as Saudi Arabia on Friday, they have the public executions. It's like every country should have the right to do whatever they want, however they want to do it. It's like, ideally, by the consent of the majority of the people. I'm a believer in democracy, but I'm not so naive as to think that I can impose it on anybody else. It is a virus. It's infectious. If you do it right, other people want it. They catch it. If you don't do it right or you destroy it the way Bush is doing it, it actually diminishes democracy around the world. And globalization is essentially anti-democratic because it violates the will of the people and instead means that governments and economies are operated for the benefit of the will of the corporate few, not the will of the people. I find this absolutely outrageous. Yesterday I shared with you an op-ed from the Wall Street Journal saying, hey, it's just globalization. Get over it. And here now on Think Progress, on a progressive blog, we've got an op-ed saying, hey, it's just globalization. Get over it. And what I'm saying is, hey, it's just globalization. Stop it! Time to do something about it. Use this as a wake-up call. So I guess you've gotten my point. 1-866-440-8466. Margaret, Neverett, Washington. Hey, Margaret.
Hi, Tom. You know, I'm wondering if we might join together as an audience to start calling our congressmen and saying to them, how much is the nation that's going to be gathering our tax in to pay them to run our ports? How much are they contributing to the Iraq war?
Well, we're not actually paying them with tax dollars. They charge the shipping companies that move freight through, and then they make a profit on that. The point is, though, that they don't have to pay the expenses of port security. We pay for that, you and me, the taxpayers.
Yeah.
So this is a classic example of internalizing profits, externalizing costs, which is the first imperative of you know, any business, ultimately, and a tragic one. But a good point. I think that we should be calling our members of Congress and saying, hey, when did we start selling off America, and when are we going to stop selling off America? Let's do away with the trade debt. Let's change our trade policy so we no longer have a trade deficit. Let's change our tax policy so we no longer have a budget deficit. Let's get America back on into fiscal sanity. And by the way, the things that I'm saying are things that on literally in the 1950s the Democrats were saying, and in the 1970s in the 60s Barry Goldwater was saying. I mean, this is stuff that Americans, whatever party is out of power, has always been yelling at the other party about deficit spending and all this stuff. This isn't Republican or conservative. This is about what's best for America, and everybody understands it. You don't spend, anybody who's ever had a family budget, you know, you don't spend more than your income. And because we've spent more than our income, we're broke, and so these countries are coming to us and saying, hey, you're broke. How about you sell off your ports? We'll give you some money.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on.
They want us, and that's the only way they're going to get us is to deplete us.
And that's what they're doing.
We're almost depleted.
And that's what we're doing. And Bush is at the head of the parade to make it happen, and now here at the top of the Think Progress blog, they're at the top of that parade. I'm just boggled by this. Margaret, thank you for the call. Orangeman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're on the air. Hey, Orangeman.
Hi, Thomas. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Wonderful. Love you.
Thank you.
Sunday, on one of our progressive shows in Pittsburgh, which are not that many, one of our friends called up and said that Neil Bush was hooked up with this company, be it on the Arabic side or the English side. And they said, how Jeb Bush would push it through like there was no tomorrow. So I don't know if you know that or if anyone else out there heard that, but supposedly Neil Bush has strong ties with this company.
The Dubai Port World? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen that. And I would guess that if he had significant ties, that it would have hit the press by now. But it may be that it'll just be out tomorrow. You know, Neil Bush is the great opportunist. You know, when his brother passed, Bush threw No Child Left Behind, mandating that schools had to go to private corporations and buy testing for their kids. Testing that back when I was in school, my teacher they'd write out tests and run them off on the Mimeo machine. It cost nothing. Now, with No Child Left Behind, they have to go to private corporations, buy these tests for in some cases as much as $50 to $100 a test for 25 pieces of paper, right? Because we're charging for intellectual property, and testing business went from a multi-million dollar business to a multi-billion dollar business, and Neil Bush, surprise, surprise, gets in the educational testing business. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's in the pork business, but frankly, I don't know. But keep an eye on it, Orangeman.
They should have had you write those books. I finished your book, We the People, and I'm working on the Jefferson one now.
Oh, great. Thank you.
If you had been writing these books when I was a kid, I'd have probably been a doctor or a lawyer today. That's how great you are.
Well, bless you. Thank you. Thank you for your kind words.
We the People, I just said our forefathers are probably rolling our graves, Thomas.
I think they are. I really think they are. Orangeman, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Jeannie in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Jeannie.
Hi. Good morning. It's almost afternoon, I guess.
Coming up on it on the West Coast.
I'm on the West Coast, too. I was watching little Scotty McClellan this morning on C-SPAN, and he was having a press conference. And he's very, very quiet and restrained, and he was talking about the fact that anything that left foreign ports coming to American ports, he said, was 100% secure because it had all been checked at the foreign ports. So we had people there checking everything, and so anything that would be shipped from a foreign port to an American port has already been checked.
If he said that as a blanket statement, it's a bald-faced lie. My guess is he identified
it. And what was interesting was last night, I think it was on ABC, we were watching national news, and they were talking about how they had conducted, I think it was ABC, in the past, I think three different times, shipping depleted uranium from foreign ports to American ports.
And it was not detected.
Pardon me?
And it was not detected.
And it was not detected.
Yeah.
And they said, yet the depleted uranium shows up if it's under, whatever they use, Geiger count or whatever
right.
to check. It shows up the same way as enriched uranium.
Sure.
And it was three different times.
Well, it depends on how well it's shielded, but because, you know, radiation, it depends on how much lead and concrete
right.
is around it. But yeah, it's and the cons are spinning this thing so hard. Yesterday, Limbaugh on his program made a statement to the effect of, well, you know, the Coast Guard inspects all our ships. Well, that's true. The Coast Guard does inspect all ships. They inspect all ships coming into U.S. ports to make sure that they have fire extinguishers
right.
and lifeboats.
That's right.
They are concerned with safety of the ships.
And
they do not inspect the contents of the containers. Only 5% of the contents of the containers coming into the United States is inspected. Now, it's possible, I didn't hear the press conference with Scotty, but it's possible that what he was talking about was coming from one particular country where we're actually doing inspection. Who knows? I don't know. Tom, thanks for the call, though, Jeannie. Tom in Minneapolis. Tom, we got about a minute. What's in your mind?
Okay. On framing and the use of wordplay and alliteration.
Yeah.
The media loves alliteration, like culture of corruption, flip-flop, compassionate conservative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Howard Dean tried to turn the tables on the Repubs and call them flim-flammers.
That's an old phrase. I mean, that's a phrase my grandparents would have used.
Well, no, but you don't think 20-somethings and 30-somethings understand what the word flim-flam means?
I'm not sure. We were discussing this in the chat room. I know you're in the chat room, and I was asking, you know, is this a new phrase that, I don't know, you know, David, my producer, is this a phrase that people of your generation use, flim-flam? He's giving me a blank look.
Oh, because I thought something like that would work, you know, just
Alex,
flim-flam.
Have you heard it?
Huh?
No, I'm wondering if Alex Goldmer, pop on, Alex. Have you heard it?
No, I've never heard it in my entire life.
Okay.
Well, about the Republican Great Depression?
Well, the Republican Great Depression we can redo, but I've been telling you this for 2 days in the chat room, Tom. I think the flim-flam is a buzz.
Too archaic.
Yeah, I think it's too archaic. I think it passed over the edge back.
You know, this defining globalization as harmony and cooperation.
Yeah.
It's the same as the system of individual rights that the cons try to say.
Yeah.
They're trying to redefine capitalism as a governing
absolutely.
System.
Absolutely. I really hope that people will go to thinkprogress.org, read this piece at the top, this counterpoint, and give them some blowback on it, because this is absolutely nuts. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you there in Minneapolis. It's 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, it's amazing the stuff that you found. One of our callers from the Seattle area, for KPTK, Talk 1090 in Seattle, called, and we tracked this thing down. Foreign Affairs Magazine, November-December 2004 issue, an article by Gal Luft and Annie Corin, Terrorism Goes to Sea. These apparent kamikazes in training have questioned crews. Now, this is since 9/11. They're hijacking tankers. These apparent kamikazes in training have questioned crews on how to operate ships and have shown little interest in how to dock them. In March 2003, an Indonesian chemical tanker, the Dewi Madrim, was hijacked off Indonesia. The 10 armed men who seized the vessel steered it for an hour through the busy Strait of Malacca and then left the ship with equipment and technical documents. I've sailed through the Straits of Malacca. That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, so there, you got that. It looks like if bin Laden and trainings are doing something, it probably will involve ports, hijacking ships. And then over at the Daily Kos right now. Now, before I tell you this story, I got an email while I was on the air here an hour or so ago, and I deleted it because it had come from a right-wing website, and I thought that the subtext of it was, bin Laden's still alive, be afraid, be afraid. And I didn't, you know, it's like, I don't want to air these stories. But it was a story about how there is this story going around, apparently on the right-wing websites, about how the way that messages are being communicated to bin Laden is that sheikhs and wealthy folks from Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East go to Pakistan and Afghanistan on falcon-based hunting trips. Just like Cheney's down there in Texas with dog-based hunting trips, the Arabs in the Middle East, they use falcons. And that really the hunting trip was just a cover for getting out there in the woods where they could hang out with Osama bin Laden and communicate messages to him. So now we discover, this is where it gets really weird. The Emir of Dubai, the head of the family that owns Dubai Ports, is an associate and hunting companion of Osama bin Laden. One noted visitor, this is incredible. After the Taliban takes control of the area around Kandahar, Afghanistan, September 94, prominent Persian Gulf state officials and businessmen, including high-ranking UAE and Saudi government ministers, such as Saudi intelligence minister Prince Turki Al-Faisal, frequently secretly fly into Kandahar on private jets for hunting expeditions. General Wayne Downing, Bush's former National Director for Combat Terrorism, says they would go out and see Osama, spend some time with him, talk with him, you know, live out in the tents, eat the simple food, engage in falconing, some other pursuits, ride horses. One noted visitor is Sheikh Mohammed Ibn Rashid Al Maktoum, United Arab Emirates Defense Minister and Crown Prince for the Emirate of Dubai. This is a guy who's one of the owners of Dubai Ports World. Now, you can get neurotic about it. You have my permission. It goes beyond just the selling off of America. Amazing. Amazing. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi. Hey, Jeez Louise is the queen of bumper music.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. Indulge me in conjecturing, but could it be that the privatization of our ports evolved out of our free trade agreements because once imposed tariffs probably helped maintain the ports?
That's right.
And without money to maintain them, perhaps the ports were sold maybe for fire sale prices to cronies and kept quiet because, like all ruling class people, they love their privacy.
Right. And then those cronies, American cronies, then sold them to foreign cronies because the foreigners had more money than we did and they wanted to bring some money back into the United States. And the U.S. guys said, hey, you know, I'll take the money and build a mansion in Texas and retire and go hunting on 50,000-acre game preserves. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely, Bonnie. Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
Mary in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Tom. Hey. I wanted just to give you a couple of little tips of information that I discovered. First, last night when the first time that the White House spokesman Dan Bartlett came out to respond to this ports deal,
He
said that this has been a done deal since November.
Well, I'd say it's been been a done deal for years. I mean, this company is operating ports all over the world and has been for a long, long time.
In two cases, that's not true. First, if it is, the fact that Bush hasn't known anything if it truly was then in November is absolutely...
Well, this is just part of the selling off of America, Mary. I mean, this is the thing that happens. These guys, they're selling off America. Bush doesn't have to know about every single sale. In fact, he doesn't even care. And if it's a company that his father has done business with, you know, the Saudi company or something like that, he's probably, you know, they probably don't even bother to wake him up.
Right. Well, but the thing is, though, is that I don't think that just a couple days ago, for some other reasons,
yeah.
And actually there was several other companies, a Danish company. There's been bidding wars going on since the end of October.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was only until January 26th, actually on 26th, P&O accepted a bid from a company called Tamasek.
Yeah. It's amazing. It gets more and more. I'm sorry, I got to move along. It just gets more and more convoluted. But the bottom line is it's selling off America. Ed in San Juan, we have about a half a minute. Hey, Ed.
Okay, quickly then. Let's frame it this way. The Republicans can frame it that the jobs in the seaports were only low-paying jobs that Americans didn't want to do.
Nobody's going to buy it, Ed. Everybody knows the longshoreman jobs are great jobs.
And then when it finally gets hit, we're going to frame it that the Democrats were soft on security and didn't want the Patriot Act.
What does that have to do with it?
Well, that's what they're going to say.
Oh, well, they're going to,
that's
I mean,
the bottom line. We're always soft on security and don't want the Patriot Act.
Right. You're right. That is what they're going to say. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, conservative Jim Harper says, don't worry, be happy about spy chips. Yeah, truly. Dr. Pariza says secondhand smoke damages the unborn. Harvey Kay will be here on Thomas Paine. Don't miss the next Tom Hartman program, Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.